from the grassroots.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's the city-famous Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Yes, the show with me as the host. Stay tuned, and I will stay broadcasting.
About 9:30 on May 18th on Thursday evening, down here in downtown Santa Cruz, talking with Crow. Crow, you had a pleasant experience, if that's possible, with Officer Pam Bechtel, the CSO's ticket book. Never met a ticket it didn't like, or at least until now. Apparently, you why don't you tell us the story? You yourself actually had a run-in with Pam Bechtel. Back in, 2 years ago at the Farmer's Market?
Uh-huh.
And how did that happen?
Well, I was playing my amplified music with my Fender guitar and playing with other musicians there.
Food Not Bombs, 4 p.m. Wednesday deal?
Yeah, a little bit after Food Not Bombs served, because you want to overpower them with their energy, serving food. We were playing music, and I was playing my amplified guitar, and Spamula came up and got me when I wasn't looking. And she
what did
wrote
you call
me
her?
Spamula?
Spamula.
Spamula. That's a nice nickname for a cop. You know, we have a RoboCop, and now he has Spamalot. It's great.
Suggesting perhaps that her Pam is spam, eh?
Maybe. I don't know.
So she wrote you a rather costly ticket for playing amplified music on
the permit? At the time, because it was just mere paper that she wrote her name on and said I was cited for some violation.
Yeah, cool. I've been cited for that same thing, although the amplified sound permit that they were requiring of me was for a television I had on the avenue playing a police abuse video.
Yes.
But and the ticket ended up being $364 or something?
Yeah, somewhere in the universe is about that much. There's no way in my universe I was going to pay for it. But I knew the consequences of when you don't listen to people to tell you to go sit in the back of the bus are, you know, when you get cited or go to jail.
Right.
So she just cited me, so I took the citation, and I basically, my mind tore it up because I don't believe in it. But a lot of people do that with, you know, either going to jail or getting citations, is ignore them or go to jail. But
it had consequences?
It had consequences to that action. I, during some other altercation with the police, was run my identification, came up that I had a warrant for that citation, and so did the person that I was hanging out with, and we had to bail our vehicles out. After being arrested for 4 days for a total amount of $800 that came out of my pocket for that. So it was kind of upper-handed twist of fate there.
But this time, yesterday, you had a different experience with Pam.
Yeah, talked about the experience as soon as you get away from the motor of the Metro.
Go ahead.
So Spamla came up to us on Wednesday, and she was there with her daunting self, but I wasn't there actually when she showed up. I had left the permit on the amplifier, and Sitar Allen was there. And Allen,
the sitar was recently stolen.
Yeah, just like your car. And but it's there. We'll get it back. Sitar Allen told. I don't want to call her spam anymore, but told her that we had a permit. And her eyes opened up real wide, and she was very surprised that we had gotten a permit. So I went running over.
She came over originally claiming that someone had complained that you didn't have a permit. But someone had complained that kind of a peculiar complaint, right?
Yeah, it was pretty peculiar because usually if somebody complains, they're being bothered.
Right.
But they were just complaining that maybe they don't have a permit.
I see.
But I went running over there, and I pointed to the definitions of time, place, and matter, and she was just very happy. And I told her if there was any complaints of noise volume, that she can come to me because I was the person in charge of the volume to turn it down. And she was also very surprised about that. And
Someone like you, a ne'er-do-well, be in charge of these issues?
Yeah, something that anybody was in charge of anything over there. She was surprised at that. Not really in charge, but just like, you know, being the person responsible if something happens with the sound or the uncleanliness or maybe traffic being disrupted by people dancing.
Shockingly enough.
Yeah, that I would be responsible for that.
And her response?
So I get nailed to the cross for something to happen bad. So anyway.
Good Christian, you should be happy about that.
Anyway. That was good. What fucking happened next? So she was just enlightened, and she said to me, I said, you know, maybe talk to the person that complained about it, that, you know, if they have any problems with it, just tell us. And it's like, she told me that if the person was just complaining about if we had a permit or not, it's just too bad, and she walked off.
Well, since you have a permit, it makes absolutely, I mean, the complaint is spurious.
Yeah.
So the idea that she said,
in her mind, the complaint is spurious.
So I see two Bechtelisms here. One, coming over to investigate this rather ridiculous complaint in the first place. Maybe if it were music too loud, that might be one thing, but she didn't say that. And the second thing, the idea that she's doing you a favor, the person says, it's just too bad, as though she's somehow going to flip off the person who's making the complaint, when in fact you have a permit. The answer is, well, you have a permit.
Yeah.
Not the answer is, I'll defend you, it's just too bad.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sorry, it's more posing. Posing by
Bechdel. Posing, coyness, you know, and I could read it, but I wasn't going to challenge her on it, you know,
because... You were so pleased that she was so happy.
I was actually just doing my diplomatic hippie way and giving her a smile, even though I want to give the whole system a finger.
There
not
you are.
Particularly her. It's a not a matter
vicious
of her.
Hypocrite, supposedly a Christian, actually a slimy, malicious scoundrel, a two-faced
dog.
Hey,
you know, hangs out with Jesus Christ, all the scoundrels and the slimes, right?
Never met her.
Yeah, right, I know.
Thank you, Crow.
And welcome to Bathrobs Pier's Broadsides. We've got interviews. We've got... ancient radio plays from 1954. I'm going to be playing the conclusion of Reuben Ship's The Investigator sometime during the show. So if you stay tuned, you can hear it. Great radio play, although nobody called in praising it last show. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and you can also catch up with the show, or I can catch up with you on Pages in Color. That's a chat room that every few weeks I take a peek at. Actually, I try to look at it every few minutes, but seldom succeed. As a result, I'm all alone in the chat room because people feel neglected, and so there you are. But I will try to keep an eye on it. And, of course, the telephone is available here. Hopefully, if you have 50 cents, if you're a poor person, access to a cell phone, if you are wild enough to try cell phones, or, hey, maybe you will... go use somebody else's landline. The phone number here is 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's us. If you want to leave a message for the collective rather than just for me, say you want a public service announcement aired on the air, or you'd like a shot at getting a show yourself, or you've got some general concerns, or you want to donate a large or possibly a small sum of money or some equipment or who knows what, some good advice, or maybe you're trying to start your own radio station, whatever it might be, then you call the radio, Free Radio's voicemail. That's 457-4523. I'm sorry, 427-4523. Yes, 427-4523 is the voicemail, and of course the call-in number to the show if you want to talk on the air about the issues I cover, which usually sort of spiral around Santa Cruz locally. Sometimes they get a bit broader. I rage against the Iraqi criminal war and occupation, which our government is doing, and which our city council, with a few token protests, doesn't seem to be too concerned about. You can call in, 427-3772. And you can also, of course, jump on the chat room at pagesincolor.com. So, my number off air, now that I'm running through all these numbers anyway, is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833, which is the number for me and for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and also a contact number for SAFE. SAFE is a musicians group that takes back public space every Wednesday night. Every Wednesday night for the last 2.5 years, it has been appearing on the streets, playing in violation of numerous downtown ordinances, and then being studiously ignored by the police and celebrated and championed and appreciated by the rest of the community, which would be fine, except that individual performers aren't so lucky, and they suffer the Bechdel treatment from this rookie, that rookie, and so forth, even from some of the old-timers. You know, cello players have been dragged away in handcuffs. You're going to hear a lot of that on this show. And if you go into the archives, and I've got several years of archives that are online available on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org, you'll be able to go back and listen to old shows and at least hear the accounts of people who claim that they have been unfairly targeted by police downtown for essentially not just innocent behavior, but productive behavior in the case of street performers, and I would say certainly First Amendment-protected behavior That is, if we had a First Amendment, but this is 2006, isn't it? I keep forgetting. So, before I go any further, I want to do a quick nod to Uncle Dennis, whose show is coming up next. Here's a little promo for Uncle Dennis.
From the cream to the dregs. From the cream to the dreg. From the cream to the dreg. It's every Thursday night from 8 to 11. From the cream to the dreg. From the cream to the dreg.
You get the general idea. That comes up after Bathrop's Piers Broadsides at 8 o'clock tonight. Stay tuned. A few more interviews, and then I'm going to kind of move on to finish up a few things that I started last Sunday. The show airs twice weekly, Sundays and Thursdays. The things I started on Sunday were I'm going to call it grueling because it was somewhat interesting but also somewhat depressing replay of the Santa Cruz City Council meeting from Tuesday before last when the City Council passed the dreaded parking garage paranoia law, making all parking garages as of June 22nd or thereabouts off limits to all you people without cars or bicycles unless you're walking directly through. And for those of you fortunate enough or burdened enough to have a vehicle, don't try to stay with your vehicle for more than 15 minutes, or an officer may warn you, followed by a citation for, $124? I think we finally learned the amount of the citation. So we'll be talking about, or you'll be listening to some of that. I'm also going to play, as I mentioned before, The Investigator, the final part of that radio play, which satirizes former Senator Joseph McCarthy. And I have the usual bubbling cauldron of street interviews, so stay tuned. Plus, of course, your contribution. You can join this mishmash of, varied items. I like to talk about many issues locally, kind of mixing them all up and putting them on top of each other and weaving them in one with the other. So a lot of that happens simultaneously and sometimes perpendicular and parallel, who knows, but that's what I'd like to do. You can call in at 427-3772, and while I'm waiting for your calls, I will be playing some tapes as well as preparing some more commentary. So here we go.
About 15 to 2 on Sunday, May 28, 2006. I'm here outside Streetlight Records talking with
Ray.
And Ray, you're a man with a
Ray. A Congo Ray.
Congo Ray. Sorry, Congo Ray.
That's all right.
You got your Congo with you. You got a milk crate with you. You got a bike.
Yeah, I don't have to carry the thing anymore on my back. I used to carry it like for 15 years. I finally figured out how to carry this thing. Got a little car behind it. The other way I was playing on the street over here where I normally played.
This is at the corner of Pacific and,
and Elm Street Station, and it's next door to Union Grove Music,
right,
where I purchased a lot of musical instruments. But I used to make a living, enough to eat on and live on right here on this corner, playing my music, not for panhandling, but for supplying a musical service, and people gave me donations. So the other day, policeman circled me, come back around upside me. He says, "You can't play here."
You were seated. You were seated with about 10 feet of that.
In front of that bush right there.
About 20 feet from the change making machine.
Yeah, that was the deal. And I have no idea, but
actually, it's legal to play.
And I wasn't sitting on the ground. I'm sitting on a milk crate that Zachary's loaned me.
That's also legal. Yeah. In other words, you can't sit down on the ground within 50 feet. You can't spare change within 50 feet.
Right.
But you can play an instrument for a musical donation.
Yeah,
that's true.
Tricky.
So how many cops came back?
In other words, just one. And I didn't want to get into conversation with them, so I just shined it on. I just shook my head and went away. And I thought about it later. I go, well, man, I need to prosper and pursue happiness, and that's exactly what I was doing. And I don't steal. I've been a chief cook for the veterans for 1,000 hours out of my heart. I cook 70 meals a day for 3 days a week for a year and a half for no money. And
where was this?
At the Vets Hall. I had the key to that building.
And when was this?
This was like 2 or 3 years ago. The chaplain came to me and asked me for help, and I went and helped him.
Right.
And then I saved actually 39 people's lives, 12 in this town, 9 documented, from fires and fights and I don't know. But I'm just trying to...
So you saved their lives from...
Like a fire that happened right over here. It was on Center Street, I believe. That's the where Loud Nelson is. It was at Stewart's house next door, the mailman. I couldn't sleep. It was like 2:30 in the morning. I go over there, and I seen these puffs of smoke in the sky. It was calm night, and I didn't know what to think of it. But then I got curious, and I went over and checked, and the back house was on fire, and the car was on fire. 9 people living in the house. I kicked the door until they came out and called 911 and so on and so forth. So and then they said, well, don't you want to get recognition for this? I go, no, anybody would have done it. You know, I'm not out to get and make a name.
Well, they did recognize you. They drove you away from Congo playing near the change-making machine.
They did. And but I'm going to continue. My band of the Elderly Brothers will work
out. You're the elderly brother.
Yes, so I am the maker of my songs, my 12 songs, like Hot Dog, I'm Homeless Man, Poison Oak Ain't No Joke, and stuff like that. I just want one of them to work. I'm going to try to come out on K-Pig with Sleepy John on a Sunday, and then the newspapers, the Good Times.
You expect an exclusive, particularly on your street songs.
You have an exclusive. Because I respect you, and you have done a lot for the people of this town by being an A.
Rescue no one from a fire, man.
That don't matter, but you help with the knowledge of how to defend ourselves for freedom.
We've been talking with
Congo Ray.
Thanks, Congo Ray.
You're welcome.
Looks like a bit of space before the next interview. So let me turn to a few notes here. The parking garage paranoia law, which puts a 15-minute limit on the amount of time you can sit in your car and do anything at all, is, as I said, going into effect in mid-June. And I'm going to be doing an update on this on indiebay.org. Or Santa Cruz Indie Media, as it's known, which is www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And I encourage people to keep abreast of that and what's going on in Santa Cruz on that website, even though it's had its problems and still engages in selective deletions of some people, as I've talked about before. I understand now they're getting better. I haven't noticed deletions of my Huff colleague Becky Johnson, who is one of the best writers in Santa Cruz on homeless issues, and I want to commend Indy Bay for realizing that homeless issues are something that we really have a shortage of writers on, and it's important to stick with, you know, allowing that kind of discussion and dialogue to continue. We had a Huff meeting actually it was yesterday. Huff is, of course, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. And we were following the Donna Dice's, who's done a lot of writing on the case of Shane, who's a man who Donna testifies, and he himself testifies, he was assaulted by a rather beefy, tall police officer, Officer Dan Brierley, on Pacific Avenue while Shane, was in handcuffs. And Shane is a relatively short guy, rather frail looking. He has AIDS. and he was trying to help somebody jumpstart a car, and Brierley apparently took exception to his tone or his attitude, and Brierley put him in handcuffs, and then by the account of Shane and Donna, slammed him against a fence, and then when he bounced back from the fence, kind of rebounded and hit Brierley in the chest with his body, not apparently intentionally, Brierley charged him with battery and took him off to jail. And they were going to go to an arraignment, but the DA apparently is getting nervous about it, or they're, for some reason, they're delaying the arraignment. And Donna is writing about this a lot on the same Indie Bay website, and she did speak with us about it on Free Radio, and you can catch that show if you go back into the archives a couple of weeks on the Huff website. If you want to check out an earlier one of these shows that I do, they tend to appear on the website a day or two or three after they have aired, and then you can go back and maybe review some parts of the show that you found particularly exciting, play it for your friends, send me thousands of dollars, that sort of thing. Or alternately, call me on some mistakes I've made, some inaccuracies, some gross slanders. So just trying to I want to keep you updated on that. An editorial apparently has appeared in today's Cabrillo Voice. I haven't seen it, but I got the word from the student who wrote it, Matt Marks, one of the, almost half dozen students who came to city council to protest the parking garage paranoia law. And I want to remind you that at Cabrillo College, the head of the Cabrillo Democrats, the Cabrillo Democrats and represented by the head of the Cabrillo Democrats, the student body president, the Cabrillo Republicans, as well as numerous other Cabrillo students, spoke out against this parking garage paranoia law, which is going to be criminalizing people who are in parking lots at all, ducking in out of the rain, pausing, going in there to talk to a friend who is parking a car there, pausing to put a flyer on a vehicle. All these things are now going to become suspect activities and can be the basis after a warning from a police officer for a $124 citation. And even those who park their vehicles are going to find themselves in the same situation. In fact, why don't we go directly to that more of that same grim scene? And, well, I know that this is a fait accompli, that is a done deal, and I know that we are going to be facing this in Santa Cruz on 22nd of June, and frankly, I don't see that there's a lot of sentiment at the moment for strong protests. I know that some people like Crow, who you heard the interview with earlier, as well as other homeless folks have talked about mounting protests, and I've talked about some satirical protests as well. And who knows, maybe some not-so-satirical protests. And we know that the Law Center for Homelessness and Homelessness and Poverty, Tulin Ozdigger, has written a letter very particularly characterizing this attack on the public, which as it is, it's this restriction on the public, allegedly again for safety, for security, even though we have no police stats of arrests. We only know that there are three cases per month per parking garage in terms of police calls, not even convictions, not even arrests, not even bona fide crimes. And this is because the actual stats that were given by the police department just talk about phone calls into the police around such things as camping, suspicious character, burglary, and vandalism. I mean, there are some real crimes that happen in these garages, just as happen elsewhere in the downtown. Anyway, here's some more from the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of May 23rd, where this law went zipping through.
How many additional people wish to speak on this issue?
This is Mayor Matthews.
One. Two. Okay, those are our final speakers.
Hello, my name is Angela Sweat, and all I really have to say is us as a homeless community, not just of the elderly, but of the youth, have no rights. Cops made that so. People who walk down the street make that so. College students make it so. when they take paintball guns and they shoot at us, when they call us names, when they down us, when we try to spange and try to get something to eat, and they tell us that we gotta leave, and we're watched when we go inside stores, when we try to get food and try to even pay for it or ask to leave, because we're not allowed to eat. We're not allowed to exist. We're not allowed to sleep. We're not allowed to be. And it's not just here in Santa Cruz. It's everywhere. It's everywhere happening now in the United States of America. I've seen from 12-year-olds to old men and women. I've seen the sick. I even seen a man that they wouldn't allow inside the hospital with a bag of feces dripping out of his bag because they wouldn't let him in and see and froze to death in front of the hospital. This is an issue everywhere. We are taking all the talents and all the youth and the people that want to become something, and we're throwing it away. Because we can't see past our own wants and what we want to do in our own entertainments. We can't see past ourselves. I see everybody walking around, and you know what they talk about? Them. And what they're going to do, and what they're going to spend their money on, and what type of entertainment they're going to do, this, that. Well, there's a 12-year-old running the streets that I've seen going hungry and stealing from stores. 18-year-olds, 15-year-olds, sleeping in abandoned miniums with a dog, stealing food and trying to feed the dog as well as themselves. This is not just the issue here. It's an issue everywhere. And that is all that I have to say right now. Thank you.
What's up, guys? My name is Matthew Eubanks. I've been sitting back there for a while now. I've been looking at it, each and every one of your faces. Okay? Especially yours, Miss Cook. And honestly, I can honestly say that no matter what we say up here, I believe that you guys have already made the decision. But please consider this. What would you do if it were your children out there? What would you do if you were out there? Would you just die, or would you go and try and spange to make money for food? Would you run out of breath, or would you go and steal some air? Would you allow a police officer to come up to you and tell you that you're doing something illegal when you know you're not? Okay? Like most people have said here, okay? I mean, come on, let's make some common sense out of this. Right? There are people out there, right, that need help. And right now, you guys are in control of that. What's stopping you? Do you have an answer? Or are you just up here just to listen to us, and then you're going to go home and you're going to watch your TV and make your dinners, however big or small they may be, and you're going to forget about us? Because fact of the matter is, there's more of us than there are of you. Plain and simple. Right? And with your gang, and yes, that is what I do call the police, a big gang with a badge. And believe me, that badge is the only thing protecting them from us. Because without it, there's so many of us, and there's so little of all of you. So why don't you guys stop pretending that you care and actually do something to help us? Because like my friend here said, there's a lot of talent out there. There's a lot of people who do want to get an education. Me, myself, I am one of them. I'm not one of those types that likes to give up. And if need be, I will continue to help fight this case. Okay. just because I look like whatever it is that you people may think I look like. I can take these gloves off, I can take this vest off, I can take this hat off if it makes me look more proper. Fact of the matter is, there's a bunch
Your
of kids out
up.
There. There's a bunch of kids out there that could be yours. What would you do if it were your children? Think about that.
My name is Don Zimmerman. I'm appearing here as a member of the board of the Santa Cruz County chapter of the ACLU, on behalf of which I request up to 5 minutes, if needed, to express
sure.
our views.
Sure, and we do have your letter.
Thank you. And I ask that...
And it's interesting. It was pointed out to me that when I said I'm representing Huff and want 5 minutes, and I did this a few minutes before Don did here, she said, if you must... So, I feel a little bit piqued that I didn't get the same reception old Don did. But here's Don Zimmerman of the ACLU, whose position we have to have given some credit. He and the Downtown Commission, which expressed reservations, partially because of Don's position, the Downtown Commission, I think, expressed reservations about including the lots into the entire anti-homeless parking garage paranoia law, and the lots were all removed, that is to say the open-air lots, except for parking lot number 9, the only really homeless lot across from the Elm Street Mission. And in all candor, of course, that also lot is also used by people coming out of the Catalyst and has various populations use it, but it is the one directly across from the homeless meal at Elm Street. Anyway, Zimmerman's ACLU didn't want to use the word homeless at all in their discussions, and because they don't like to be on record, apparently, of favoring civil rights for homeless people or regarding that as a real class of people, even though it obviously is and has been for decades. It's a class line that they're not really willing to cross. But still, the law, which requires it to be gone in 15 minutes from parking garages, is so outrageous, a violation of traditional Santa Cruz norms, and also has so many intrinsic civil liberties problems for the population generally, that Don Zimmerman was somewhat aghast at the law and took the issue to the ACLU. He was an ACLU member and came up with sort of half a loaf. This is his half loaf coming up. It's unfortunate, though, he got his half loaf at the previous council meeting when they excluded the lots. Some of us felt, I was one of them, that he should have gone for the whole loaf and at least made the pitch for eliminating the law entirely, pointing out that it's not a really good public safety measure for all kinds of reasons, that it isn't carefully examined, that it's a special interest measure pushed by the parking lot workers and the police as another tool. We've heard that phraseology used, you know, with the NSA, trying to have another tool to deal with Al-Qaeda, or with the Pentagon with its tools for spying on the UCSC and other campuses, or the SCPD's tools for watching the peaceful parades and doing political surveillance, all these tools that we're giving them. One would think that this kind of terminology, particularly for ACLU members like Mike Rotkin and Sheila Coonerty, would be discredited. But, of course, they're not, because we have some pretty outrageous, high-flown hypocrisy happening in Santa Cruz, which should be the subject of a book. Who knows? Maybe it will be. More from the Santa Cruz City Council of May 23rd. Don Zimmerman of the ACLU speaks.
Accepted as part of the record of this hearing. Well, I first want to say that we're very pleased with the amendments that were made at the last session of the council with respect to the surface parking lots. We understand that the sentiment of the council, with which we do not disagree, is that if at a future time there is information, there are public safety data supporting the inclusion of additional surface lots, that will be taken up by the council. So I'd like to turn to a few remaining issues in the ordinance that we find a bit troubling. One is the disparity between the way this ordinance is described as to how it will be administered and enforced and the way it actually reads. It has been referred to by shorthand by virtually everyone referring to it as the 15-minute rule. And it has been described as an ordinance under which remaining more than 15 minutes in any of the four parking garages in the process of parking or retrieving a car or on lot 9 would be a trespass violation under the ordinance. However, because of in the operative provision in the proposed chapter 964030, the word or appears in the middle. The meaning is obviously that in addition, spending any amount of time in a garage without a car to park or to retrieve is in itself a violation, and that would seem to be requiring a technical amendment to correct, and we ask that the council consider that.
Can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
That's a crucial point for me. Is that okay? The or you're talking about is the or after the number 9.64010, or who remains.
Correct. And right. If that were to read and.
There are several ors in that paragraph.
I'm sorry. That is the very or.
Right.
And if that or were changed technically to the word and, that would resolve the issue.
I believe that's an important point, and I'm going to ask the city attorney to comment after your remarks are over.
Thank you.
Of course, what Don Zimmerman is asking for is the law, as has been presented and pushed all along, be changed. It's a good suggestion, but of course, instead of saying this whole law is wrong, it's mistaken in many ways, and profoundly violates civil liberties without any real payback, which I think is the case, and which I think he thinks is the case, but he's not willing to say it because he's afraid that it will jeopardize his political standing, that people won't agree with him, he'll lose his credibility, and so forth. Instead, he's simply pushing for a partial change. We have a caller, and we will interrupt my tirade as well. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Crow. Hey, that's a lot of political windbagging from the ACLU, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, remember that it is true that this political windbagging cut the law's impact down by half. They included all the parking lots.
Oh, I am so grateful for them. At least I don't have to go to all those other parking lots and ring my bell and say I'm the Minuteman, counting the minutes down. If you're in your car, you have 15 minutes. And if you're handicapped, you have 30 minutes to get out of your vehicle. And I'll be there with my loudspeaker and my bell ringing the tones, because I'm going to be the town crier that says, you got to get out of your fucking car, or you're going to get cited for $124, and I'm going to call the cops on you.
We'll see if you show up there, Mr. Big Cop.
I bet you will. And I'll be right there so you can interview me while I'm fucking harassing people about this law.
No, enforcing the law, helping the police.
Yes. That's right. I forgot about that. Enforcing.
Yes. Enforcing the law.
Enforcing the law.
Anything else, Crow?
That's it, buddy.
Call in again if you'd like.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that, of course, was Crow, who we did an earlier interview with. Crow is a regular participant and actually initiator of musical events at the Wednesday Farmers Market, which will be joined by the Saturday Farmers Market for the first time. And sometime this Saturday, it's going to be in San Lorenzo Park. So, mark your calendars, wander on down there. I hear there are booths where if you're a homeless person, you can sell stuff. I don't know if you have to make prior arrangements. This is a strange situation, which I talked about on the air. The actual situation in the city council was strange, where the people who opposed this were Fitzmaurice and Porter, and the people who supported it were the odd conservatives. Or they're all conservatives, but the even more extreme conservatives, Rotkin, Matthews, Coonerty, and Riley. It's a really peculiar situation, but it is happening. It's going to be happening every week, along with, I understand, live music in San Lorenzo Park. We had a rather nasty headline about San Lorenzo Park, you may remember, in yesterday's Sentinel, about how Ranger Wallace is running around, Whiplash Wallace is running around cleaning up the homeless and cleaning up the tickets and harassing folks in the park. He didn't call it that, of course. I'm sure he would call it enforcing the law and getting rid of trash and litter and unseemly individuals. I am not sure what's on the city council agenda for this week. The agenda actually came out about an hour and a half ago, but I don't have a copy of it. It isn't online yet. It's probably in the library, but I'll be back on Sunday to talk about it. But there will be some stuff coming up, and if there is, hopefully I'll be able to tell you about it. Hi, you're on free radio.
Yeah, Robert, on quest for the Saturday market, I had a little clarity. People who were advertising for the Saturday market at the Wednesday's farmers market were assaulted verbally by some of the people that you were talking about.
You mean in the actual discussion at the city council meeting or at another
time? Oh, no, this was actually people just handing out flyers at the Wednesday's farmers market. The people, I believe, that you just mentioned, one of them came up to a person that was handing out flyers and verbally, not verbally assaulted, but verbally condemned the Saturday market for even coming to happen.
Now, are you talking about Fitzmaurice? Are you talking about Porter?
I think it was Porter. I think the guy who, you know, I don't know all the cronies who run the fucking city and the farmers market and everything, but I think it was one of the business association people that does the farmers market thing. Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter because, you know, all these assholes, you know, to me, you know, they don't have a name. They just smell like shit. You know, they came and verbally was telling these people that this is not a farmer's market, it's a farce, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's the same people that are doing the Saturday farmer's market over on the west side because...
Let me understand this, Crow. You of course were in the parking lot where Food Not Bomb serves, right behind Logos Bookstore, on Wednesday yesterday. Doing your probably still using your amplified sound permit.
Yeah, we got our permit. Yes.
And you actually overheard a conversation between someone you thought was a city council member criticizing.
Oh, no. It was these. You know, I'm involved with I am. You know. I couldn't put it into words, but I'm involved with some of the people that are trying to put this Saturday market together. And, you know, there's been a big thing going on with not having the Saturday market going on in San Lorenzo Park. And some of the farmer market people do not want it happening. Well, anyway, the Downtown Association Farmers Market people, one of them went to somebody who was just handing out flyers on the city sidewalk, said that we don't want any part of your thing and we just think you're just a bunch of bullshit and blah, 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 and on and on and on.
Well, now, did they say they disagreed with the flyer and however strong
they
terms?
No, just think, obviously, I just think it's because for somehow it's taking money away from these people that are running the farmers market on Wednesday.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, even people like Rotkin and Matthews thought that this would actually produce more income, not less.
Actually, it does.
But you know,
but
let me ask
reason.
Again. What the point I'm trying to get at is, the person who was distributing flyers was not told she or he couldn't distribute the flyer, right?
Well, it was close to that. It was almost close to that point of because I went. The previous week, I went into the farmer's market, and you know my voice. I'm very loud and very provocative, and I tell everybody what's going on. There's a brand new farmer's market happening on every Saturday down at San Lorenzo Park, and I was broadcasting it via mouth to everyone
right.
And handing out flyers.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't approached by anybody because I don't think people will because I think they know that I'm a town crier in the first place from the whole sitting band and everything. Maybe not. I don't know. But nobody approached me. You know.
My question, though, is was the person approached just given a bad mouth, or was he or she told we're calling the cops? Because I know I've had the cops called on me for flyering at the farmer's market.
I know.
But not that hasn't happened in 5 years, so I'm wondering if it's actually happening again or whether it's short of that.
Not yet, but people are getting pissed off that we're actually doing something that's very alternative and not with the flow of business. Mm-hmm. I think this is what the problem is. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think people are profiting who are the business people running this town. So I think this what is, I think this is what the bottom line of the problem is.
Well, that's a sort of a natural reaction from particularly groups who feel that they are, you know, have power because the Rotkin majority rules.
Obviously, they corner this little market thing, which is kind of funny. It's the Wednesday market, corner the market, ha. But anyway, it's just has happened.
I heard today from a man who wanted to sell at the farmer's market. He isn't homeless. He's a property owner. That he had great difficulty trying to get into the Wednesday farmer's market to get rid of, you know, to sell some of his stuff.
There's a lot of politics in that farmer's market.
And I know that, you know, as far as having a political table, they used to have this. There was one half of one political table you were allowed to have. I mean, I was arrested twice at the farmer's market and threatened with a restraining order, which I, of course, ignored.
Unbelievable.
You know, but I mean, that was way back in 2000. Right, but what I'm saying is, with respect to the particular thing you're talking about with the farmers market, there was a time when Janet Blazer ran the farmers market,
and
she was dumped by the board of directors because she was doing these stupid false arrests against me, which set them up for legal penalties. You know, so anyway, I'm glad to hear that isn't happening yet. Keep me advised of what's going on.
And we're
going
to push every Wednesday the farmers market that happens on Saturday.
Right, and I think the Saturday Farmers Market should mention the one on Wednesday. Why not? They can support each other, right?
Hey, you know, I don't think, but you know what? You know, we want it to be like that, but I don't think they want it to be like that because there's a power struggle going on because they want the money going to them.
Well, it's not,
I don't know.
It's not a limited, I don't think that more activity means less money. In fact, I think quite the opposite.
It's a weird situation. Nobody can figure out why they were opposing this. That the same people opposed the farmers market, the Saturday thing going on,
right,
in city council, but because of the people that are actually doing this have a very good positive energy going around them. They worked it around. To be quite honest, there's really no words to express how we got it done.
All right.
Because it's very good positive energy. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Crow.
All right, buddy. I'll see you there, too, right?
Quite possibly.
Yeah, you better be there.
I'll do what I can. Bye-bye. You know, it's interesting. I was talking about the Saturday market with Safe musician and another local activist earlier today. And they were, you know, it was suggesting that, well, I mean, my idea was that I was surprised that this farmer's market, which initially was turned down by the city council because it was opposed by the police department, but then Nick, the guy who works the farmer's market on the Saturday farmer's market, it isn't a farmer's market on Saturday, it's a general Saturday market, which has a farmer's market section, I believe. He came back and had worked with the police department and had worked with the Parks and Rec Department, particularly the Parks and Rec Department, which to me is amazing because, frankly, I've the deepest suspicion of both these departments. And I'm surprised and pleasantly surprised, amazed, that they liked his stuff. And because they did, Rotkin, Matthews, Coonerty, the city council conservatives, who essentially bow to the staff in almost everything, as distinguished from Fitzmaurice and Porter, who properly challenged the staff on a lot of things, passed this Saturday market proposal. But I'm not really talking about the Saturday market now, though I'm glad we're talking about it. And then I also want to mention, before I leave the subject of public spaces and markets, that there is also a Reclaim the Streets rally happening day after tomorrow, Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Pearl Alley, behind the Good Times at Lincoln and Cedar. I think it has to do with a musical event. You're supposed to bring some musical stuff if you can, or just yourselves. Again, 7 p.m., Pearl Alley, behind the Good Times at Lincoln and Cedar, June 3rd. You might want to check that out. Now we're getting back to the Santa Cruz City Council and the ineffable, or perhaps a little bit too effable, Don Zimmerman of the ACLU giving his five-minute presentation. He's saying, let people have up to 15 minutes in the parking lot, whether they're parking a car or not. Of course, there's no justification given. His proposal is rejected. It's kind of hard to see the proposal clearly for what it is through the technical language discussion, but that's what he's saying. He's saying if you're going to tell people to leave a parking lot after 15 minutes, let it apply across the board, not just to people who are privileged enough to have cars or bicycles. But that doesn't fly with the, we want the campers, we want the scumbags, we want everybody out to protect, the theory goes, to protect the parking workers. Don't want to close it down for the periods of time when the parking workers are working, let's say, in order to protect them or give them room to work. No, close it 24 hours a day, except for people who have vehicles and bicycles. And make a discriminatory two-tiered ordinance that says those who have cars can stay for 15 minutes. Those who don't have cars or bicycles can't even enter at all. More from Don Zimmerman and the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of May 23rd.
Is a matter of the first warning. That was an addition that was added after the Downtown Commission and others, including the ACLU, recommended that the enforcement be modified to provide for a first warning. This one we find rather unusual in that it provides that a violator may be cited after a warning that's given, quote, at least one time at any prior point in time, has received a written or verbal warning. That would, by its language, make this a warning of infinite duration. And it would seem that what we expected, and I consulted with some members of the Downtown Commission about this, their understanding and expectation of what a warning would consist of would be something like the one that exists in the Municipal Code's camping ordinance. That is that a warning would be given. If the person does not comply, they would then be cited, having a more immediate effect. And we would ask that at least the legislative history as to that be clarified as to what the meaning is, if it is not to be amended at all.
So Zimmerman is kind of sprucing up the ordinance instead of challenging it fundamentally, which is too bad. I mean, I wouldn't mind his proposing these kind of curly Q's and dotting the I's and crossing the T's and making sure that that's a recent rather than an ancient warning and all that sort of thing. If he was amending this to say, what you really need to do is rethink this whole thing and start again, because it's fundamentally a violation of people's rights, even if the courts will hold it constitutional. We know it's a violation of it vastly restricts previous Santa Cruz innocent behaviors. And there's been no real study done to assess that, what that really means. All the things people normally like to do in their cars or in a parking garage that are completely legitimate are now going to be stopped in order to deal with potential vandalism, potential burglary, potential camping, and the occasional assault that happens. And it's very occasional. And there's no figures that show there's any higher percentage of these crimes in these garages than, let's say, in the downtown area generally. Rotkin and the other city council members were repeatedly approached asking for the police to get those figures, and they refused to ask the police. I conclude that they would have gotten the wrong answer for their prefabricated ordinance that they wanted to pass.
We wish to endorse the point previously made by the Downtown Commission with respect to, and the language in their minutes was, a comprehensive plan to gather data and information about the performance of this ordinance over a 12-month period, and that this evaluation be undertaken by the Downtown Task Force. That's entirely consistent with our view about the need for information on which any further addition of parking facilities in Santa Cruz would be examined.
And Zimmerman's trying to say, don't add more forbidden zones until you do a 12-month examination. But the Downtown Task Force is not some kind of open group that people can come with testimony. It is a closed staff group consisting of the mayor, the vice mayor, heads of the staff, and individuals who are who are staff workers. I imagine, I don't know if Julie Hendy is a part of it. I think Matt Farrell is a part of it. It's a group that is, you know, weighted in favor of those who prefer bureaucratic, repressive solutions that privatize or criminalize public spaces in the interests of so-called safety and security, or giving the police more tools. So it's a bad idea. Zimmerman, however, again, is trying in his own way to say, look, don't add more without, you know, further examination, which is certainly good, provided you set it against the really basic background of saying this whole thing is wrong to begin with. Unless you have that kind of basic moral compass, you will lose your way, as I think the city council has. Although two city council members ended up voting against this, Fitzmaurice and Porter, to their credit, because they found their way, thanks to the many months of discussion that a lot of us put hundreds of hours into creating.
That the council should endorse the idea of that kind of an ongoing study, using whatever data is available, and we would throw in at this point our previous point about the unfortunate lack of arrest data. We understand the data are not generally collected in that matter. They're collected by beat. But surely upon the request of the council, that information for the downtown beat could be culled out as to which crimes occur in garages or on parking lots. Finally, as to the designation of free speech zones, we're a bit troubled that there's not much flesh on those bones. That is, there's no indication of what the standards are for establishing such zones, what the criteria would be, what department or departments would have responsibility for making those designations, and what sort of public process might be entailed. And so we ask for consideration of adding something in the record as to the council's intent as to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, City Council. Greg Montoya. It's a beautiful day. I hope we're all feeling good mind. Just essentially, it must be very difficult to run a city. I don't think I'd like to be in your position, to be honest with you. But I do feel that we have a need for social justice, social fairness. Need the wisdom of Solomon, it appears, to be able to structure a solution to this problem. I hope it's a real problem, not a so-called tempest in a teapot or much ado about nothing. I heard some powerful people speaking here. Amazing. There's obviously a disenfranchised sector of our society. And anytime you have that, historically, you know, people feel aggrieved. And they tend to ferment. And they became angry and frustrated. And the record is very clear as to what comes out of it. I'd like to essentially respond to a few things I heard from the City Council over the weeks that this is going on. One, essentially, I don't believe we're claiming that anybody can do anything in any sort of public-funded forum or place. That is, stand on my head, twirl around on my head naked or whatever, or screaming up and down, throwing dangerous objects all over. No one is saying you can do just anything in a public place, per se. I certainly don't claim the right to do so. Another one is, well, I wonder how the police will feel about it. I'm sure they got their hands full already. So how much more work do they need? Right? You know, because they got to enforce it ultimately, I believe, if this law is passed. The proof of the pie is in the eating. So thereby, when it is enforced, if and when, who will this be enforced against? That will show, ultimately, what its intent was, I believe, anyway.
And, of course, Greg Montoya is raising a number of points here. Deputy Chief Vogel responded to the question, is this going to cost any more money for the police department to enforce it? And he said, no, we have enough resources as it is. But, and that was sort of accepted as a basic statement, all without any kind of further explanation. Well, don't you expect, I guess you expect people to respect a new law, even though the law criminalizes lots of obviously innocent behavior, might run counter to the feelings of a number of people about their basic rights to be in these public spaces, and also counter to the traditions of Santa Cruz. And, you know, that issue wasn't raised with the police department. Also, the previous speaker, Don Zimmerman, talked about the vagueness of the free speech exception. This was put into the ordinance after it... was modified by the city council when it came to the council in April. And it says, this chapter of the ordinance shall not apply in areas of city parking lots and garages where there is posted permission to occupy those areas for the purpose of engaging in speech-related conduct, and persons so occupying those posted areas are doing so in accordance with the posted permission. This is their way of trying to say, see, you can't claim we're violating your free speech when we arrest you for giving out flyers about Elm Street in parking lot number 9, because we'll have posted a thing that say you can do so between 2 and 3 on every third Wednesday, or whatever. I mean, I'm making an exaggeration here, but they're claiming that they have this vague statement about free speech, which will overrule any constitutional concerns. That was the point being made, and I think it was being made fairly well by Zimmerman. Back to Greg Montoya and his commentary opposing the, or expressing concerns about the parking garage law.
So, I would think that targeting Lot 9, which I personally went down and observed recently to see who was there, and I found out what was going on there, Elm Street Mission, feeding what I would characterize generally as marginalized people who are hurting in various states of mind and emotional states, eating or getting going to be served. And I saw this lot. It wasn't much to look at, to be honest with you. But it seems to me that that sort of is a contradiction to say that it is not targeting people of a certain economic, socioeconomic basis, homelessness, emotionally troubled. They will be there. And, of course, local police know there seems to be a propensity amongst these groups or population to have warrants, outstanding warrants, from my personal experience. So they could be targeted and picked selectively, I would say.
Of course, they won't be there because homeless people are generally afraid of the police. And so they allow themselves to be run around away from a Cathcart and Pacific, what used to be Hippie Corner, away from the area in front of the New Leaf Market, away from the area in front of the Pacific Cookie Company when the benches were removed, away from the area in front of the Pacific Trading Company when the area was made unsittable by moving the railing forward on the long previously seatable planter area, away from Elm and Pacific where they put in a change machine to make it illegal to sit down within 50 feet, and now away from the Elm Street parking lot, which is the latest place of concern, because when you squeeze one part of the city, people go to another part. This is an attempt to make people disappear entirely. And it is wrongheaded, it is abusive, it is unconstitutional, and it violates the traditions of Santa Cruz, unless, of course, you're talking about the bad traditions, and I'm talking about the other traditions, the good traditions.
Thank you for your time. God bless.
Okay, we'll bring it back to the council for discussion and action. Mike?
First of all, I'm going to move approval of the ordinance in its current status.
Second.
Motion and second.
My comments.
Motion was seconded by the man who pushed the ordinance through the downtown commission with the most speedy number of hearings in a limited period of time that the staff member of the commission had ever seen, two meetings a week apart devoted solely to this ordinance, which Coonerty wanted to push through, Ryan Coonerty.
Try and keep them brief. It's unfortunate, I think, when we get kind of misrepresentation of the reality that's going on, and I suspect most people watching this on TV or listening to it don't need me to interpret comments for them, but nonetheless, it's hard to avoid at least responding, having the respect enough to respond to the comments people make, which I want to do. Number one, I think we're dealing with a very serious problem here. People that want to trivialize it, well, there's only three reports, each period, a month, for the last year. We, as council members, we get direct calls from people and emails, letters from folks who, mostly calls and emails, who explain to us, you know, unfortunately they usually tell you like a month after it's too late to do anything about it, but tell you about the experiences they've had in parking garages and why they're never coming to downtown Santa Cruz again, having experienced that, and or other kinds of responses like that. This is a serious problem. People are being regularly harassed and intimidated and threatened in our parking garages. And unfortunately, despite all the comments that people have made, there is no other feasible legal way to move people along.
Let's examine the first part of Rotkin's argument, because I was the individual who quoted his own staff's reports to show that there were no arrest records, of course, because the city council didn't bother to get them. There was no comparison of arrests with the places in the parking garages compared with the places elsewhere in the downtown, as I mentioned before. So you don't have any real data or over time whether there's an increasing number of problems, nothing like that. All you had were calls for service, and there was a very small percentage. It was 540 calls for service, of which 140 had to do with criminal or quasi-criminal behavior around camping was the largest number, at least for two of the garages, I believe. I think it was the largest category of, quote, crime. And so what you have here is Rotkin saying, it may be true that you're trying to trivialize it by saying there are only three incidents per garage per month. No, I'm not trying to trivialize it. I'm trying to find out just what the hell is going on. Instead, what we get from Rotkin is all this secret data, this privileged information he gets in the phone calls and emails, but he's made no record of it. He's made no estimation of it. The people haven't bothered to call the police department about it. No, they're calling to complain to the city council because they want the city council to put muscle on poor people, to put muscle on the community generally, to satisfy the fears of a certain segment of the community, and indeed to respond to some of the bad experiences that some people have had. But why aren't we as a community entitled to know what those experiences are in terms of the numbers? Over what period of time? In what places? How come we don't get to know that? How come we have to trust our city council is acting in good faith, even though it won't show us the data? That's the first part of Rotkin's argument that falls, unless you want to just trust Rotkin, which of course I think a lot of us don't. And even if we did, it wouldn't be a good way of making good public policy. You don't do good public policy by trusting legislative leaders who are under pressure from lobbyists of all different stripes. The second thing he's about to talk about now is that the only way we can deal with the problems that have been addressed to us is to make it absolutely criminal for anyone to go in a parking garage unless they are parking a vehicle. That argument, of course, I think really needs some serious discussion. And I've talked about it a lot on the air. I think that on its face, the argument does not pass the straight face test. The idea that you're going to criminalize public space to cut down the crime rate, you're going to assume the public is criminals in order to get rid of the criminals, is just wrong-headed. And also shows a very pronounced police state mentality.
In the downtown parking garages. If people say, well, you should arrest, use the existing laws. If somebody's actually doing X, Y, or Z, just go arrest them. As a practical reality, on what basis do you arrest somebody who is like menacing people in a parking garage? How do you define menacing in such a way that you can actually distinguish the person who's just standing there minding his or her own business from the person who actually is making it very threatening for people who told me, and I assume others as well, that they drive to a parking garage and then drive away without ever getting out of their car?
And the answer to that is the person who feels menaced calls the police, makes a police report, maybe takes a picture of the person menacing them with a small camera, contacts the hosts, who are supposed to be downtown and helpful to tourists, contacts a nearby business and asks someone to come out, or a police officer whose job it is to deal with this issue if it's truly menacing, and then takes the time to make a citizen's complaint / arrest. Now, if a citizen doesn't want to do that, doesn't want to take responsibility for that, but wants, you know, the Gestapo or the local thugs or the police department or somebody else to make things all safe and warm and cuddly for him by getting rid of all the wrong kind of people, then we do have a real problem. And in fact, that's the reality of it. But that happens everywhere in town. People don't want to deal with difficult situations that come up. They don't want to take responsibility. So instead of coming out and doing that, what we have now is we have this we have hosts and police officers leaning on street people, musicians, and poor people on the streets with the assumption that they're wrong and the people running the businesses are right. So if they're playing music and the person in front of the out in the business doesn't want them to play, they just tell the people to move on. They don't say, you know, the person doesn't like your music. If they don't like it, if they think it's unreasonable noise, and though I don't think you do because you're playing it and you're also trying to make some money off it, and you really thought it was unreasonable noise, you wouldn't be doing it and the people wouldn't be tolerating it. But one person's special privileges, a merchant, allows that person to tell the police department to do something about it. And the police department then lies to the individual, says, well, this is unreasonable noise according to the police, according to this merchant, and they're going to, so you have to move along. And very few musicians have the intestinal fortitude or wherewithal, or is it even inclination to say, hold it. If this person doesn't like it, let them come out and make a complaint. I've got lots of people here who are witness. It's not unreasonable noise. I mean, do you want to file a complaint against me yourself? And the cop might say, no, I'm just acting on behalf of the other merchant. So, well, then let the merchant act on behalf of himself or herself. Let them take the action. If that's what they really feel, and we can take it to court and discuss it there, if that's the only way that I'm going to be free from you harassing me and moving me around at the whim of this merchant or that. I mean, you know, musicians often play in the cracks. I mean, they're here. They move along when they're told to move along. They don't want to have their instruments confiscated. They don't want the hassle of a citation and a court appearance. They don't like the hassle of their audience being disrupted by this kind of treatment by police. But the fact of the matter is, it's humiliating and violates human dignity to have this happen. And also, it's unhealthy for a society for the merchants to be able to rule the roost on these issues. These are supposed to be public spaces on the sidewalk, not a private area for the merchants to set up, you know, a highway into their businesses. That's not the main function of the sidewalks. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. I guess I'm your only listener right now. But I want to go back to Rodkin and his bullshit.
Okay.
That guy disturbs me, dude. He really, really disturbs me. And the reason why I think he disturbs me is because this person, along with Coonery Jr., are trying their best to do exactly what you've been telling everybody in the listening audience, if there's anybody out there that really gives a fuck because they're not calling in, that they're being very oppressive. And the joke is that his father is running for office, and he's probably going to be elected because he raises the most money.
Neil Coonerty, yeah. Neil actually had, there was a very amusing DeCinzo cartoon attacking Neil Coonerty in the, in the Metro yesterday.
That was fucking great. Out of all the DeCinzo cartoons that I loved, besides, you know, the ones always pointing at the hippies and doing this, that, and the other thing, because I think it's great satire. Anytime you make a cartoon of hippies and stuff, I think it's great satire. But I really liked that cartoon, him being the Apostle Christ on the crucifix. But
it's
anyway,
a cartoon of Coonerty being surrounded by developers rich fat cats, and then acting like a sort of a martyred. This is the guy who wants to, he can't afford to pay a minimum. Doesn't want to see the minimum wage raised for people downtown, so they can, you know, they actually make enough money, maybe not to have a living wage, but get a little closer to it.
Yeah, but anyway, his son, the son of Sam. This guy, he's a knee-jerk little fucker, and
Now, Ryan Coonerty, Neil Coonerty's son, is a professor of constitutional law. Or
oh,
he's a professor.
Yes, I'm sure he is.
At least he says
like
he lectures in constitutional law.
Politicians.
Up at the university is what he hears.
I'm sure he does well what he does, and that's what he called political wind bagging, blowing fucking air up your ass.
Well, I got some bad news for you. We're going to hear some more windbagging, unless you want to do a little windbagging yourself.
No, I just wanted to call in and air my disgruntledness towards this whole thing that I'm listening to. But thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Sure. Bye-bye. So phone lines are open, 427-3772. If you don't want Crow to be the only caller to this show, you can beat caller number two. We have about 45 minutes left. You're listening to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of May 23rd, the final nails in the coffin of the right to use the parking garages simply as ordinary public spaces, be able to sit in your car and read a book for 20 minutes or wait for someone to come while finish a movie or to wait for it to have wait with an elderly person in your own vehicle. All these gone now as of June 22nd.
The issue that people, so I think there is a serious problem. I don't know a better way to address it. We looked at other alternatives. I certainly would be supportive of ways that didn't raise civil liberties kinds of concerns, but
actually, they didn't look at any other alternatives, and that was one of the major criticisms I have. If they had explored other alternatives in a fair and open session, I would have, said, well, then we have to consider this more seriously if the number of incidents involved is such as to really require it to happen. But they did no such thing. Rotkin is simply not speaking the truth.
Looked at it quite seriously. Secondly, had a lot of public testimony today about as if the city of Santa Cruz doesn't provide services and respond maybe, not the most generously, but one of the more generous cities in this country in terms of shelter programs, meal programs, everyone else. There's no need.
The generosity of Santa Cruz tonight will be space for 40 people of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there tonight. The rest have the benefit of the sleeping ban, which makes it a $90 crime if you sleep outdoors or cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night. That is the fact. And Rotkin, insofar as he distorts that, is justifying human rights abuses and is lying about the situation.
Money or other things to feed themselves in the city of Santa Cruz. We have food programs here for homeless people and others. And the idea that the only way that people can survive is by stealing is ridiculous. And there are people who are not willing to, look after their own self-interest not a matter of what the city's interest might be. We've been told by, one of the members of the public read us a long list of the things that people can't do, but the things that people, that's unfortunate they can't do all those things, but they also can't menace people in the downtown parking garages or the lot that's been covered.
And, of course, that's really a key question. Is this going to cut down on the number of people who can do any menacing? And a person sitting in a car who can be there for 15 minutes can menace you just as much as someone who isn't in a car. So if you're in a car, you have a right to be there for 15 minutes, and presumably you can even be there longer. If you leave and come back to get something out of your car, what are they going to say? You have to leave. It's not clear in any way that there is a direct correlation between this law and cutting down on menacing people. It will cut down on the number of people. So if you consider the majority of people there are menacing or contributing to that situation or not helping it, then I suppose it's considered to be towards a solution. Of course, many of us think that the more people there, the less chance there is of people being menaced.
I think it's the purpose that we're after in this particular case. I think it's interesting that somebody suggested that people are being thwarted from putting leaflets under people's windshields. Trust me, that by itself would be a good ordinance in terms of how people feel about people leaving leaflets all over their cars.
And this is, of course, Mike Rotkin, the card-carrying ACLU member.
Argument about why this is a nasty thing that we're doing here. It's not one of your better free speech kinds of activities. And I'm speaking to somebody who's done an awful lot of leafleting to folks, but you need to put a leaflet in somebody's hand, not leave it on their car where they're going to throw it on the ground when they come back to the car, or not notice it until they get on the road and have it blow off as they drive down the road. In general, I think we've got a situation where the ordinance that we're passing does a reasonable job of trying to address a reasonable problem. I do think we should collect statistics on this, detailed statistics about the future. But again, we're not going to get statistics that show us, you know, numbers of people being arrested for the X, Y, or Z in terms of some ongoing crime. The problem that we're trying to deal with is people that are not, it's not a specific crime. It's being in a place where their only purpose to be there is to menace people. And
has any study been done of, you know, what the number of people doing this kind of menacing is, how prevalent it is, how frequent, other than these unnumbered, uncharted, the statistics he's collected that don't have any clear numbers? The answer is no. And so now he's suddenly calling for stats in a year when he's specifically declined to ask for arrest stats. Probably because he knows the arrest stats would not support the arguments around this bill.
Comfortable. When one of the members of the public said, you know, that the downtown people are going to not come downtown now because of this ordinance, I don't think whoever said that's much in touch with the experience of the average person that comes downtown, either shopping or just to hang out on Pacific Avenue and feels uncomfortable and unsafe in the downtown parking garages. As I understand the ordinance on the point that was raised by the representative from the ACLU on the 15-minute rule, I mean, basically, the ordinance includes the ability of someone to pass through the garages to get from point A to point B. That's not prohibited. What it prohibits is people hanging out or loitering or, you know, hanging around in the garage. It does allow that people need some time to get out of their cars. It now allows additional time for people with disabilities to get out of the garage if they're parking there. The city has a process for dealing with free speech zone type things where the various departments approve it. And my last comment is that
It does. That's new to me. Maybe I should contact Mike and ask him what that process is. I think I will while this tape plays.
The issue of how long the warning is out there, it should be clear from the legislative history. I don't think we need to change the ordinance, but that when the council says there's been a warning, the intention is that the warning be some reasonable proximity from when the person actually got cited. In other words, not last week, or we just told you last week, or we told you last year, but, you know, you were told 10 minutes ago. And, you know, I don't think we have to say the exact number of minutes. It's a warning within the probably memory of the officer or, you know, who either heard it on the radio or him or herself gave the warning in a brief period previous to it, and that's the intention, I think, in terms of the warning. The absolute final comment is the fine, which is, wow, it's a lot of money, $124. Yes, it is. This is a fine that's easily avoided. All you have to do is move on when you're asked to do so. So nobody should ever be paying this fine unless they're looking to make a point by getting charged and paying the fine. This is not like a situation where you're like, wow, I didn't know I was breaking the law, and all of a sudden you're fine. No, you're going to get a warning first, and if you ignore the warning, you could be stuck with a $124 fine.
Perhaps like the guy I met today who Pam Bechtel warned could not sit in front of a building. And he was warned 3 years ago. She saw him yesterday, and she gave him a citation, which is considerably more than $124. So the idea that police officers are to be trusted to deal fairly and openly and correctly with people, with laws that are very vague and that allow great officer discretion, I think is a very questionable ruling, a questionable perspective, particularly for someone who's a member of the American Civil Liberties Union and on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, unless, of course, he's there to subvert the mission of the American Civil Liberties Union. But again, in Santa Cruz, that's not very hard because the mission of the ACLU has always been to protect some rather arcane, limited rights of middle-class people and not to protect the much broader, much more regularly violated rights of poor people. Hence, you can't get the local ACLU to even consider a resolution which states that sleeping bans are, in the absence of shelter space, are a criminalization of a basic survival right. You can't tell a person he can't sleep if you have no place to put them. You can't say you're not allowed to go to sleep at all simply because we've decided we want to make it difficult for you to survive in this area. That's not that's a human rights violation as well as being a civil rights violation. You can't do that, but the American Civil Liberties Union of Santa Cruz recently sent a letter back to the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom and HUF, as well as the human rights organization, two groups that approached them, Sheila Coonerty signed the letter, saying in essence that they didn't even want to consider the issue unless an ACLU member brought it up. So it's okay for violations to continue. All that activist Bernard Klitzner was looking for was simply a resolution from the American Civil Liberties Union, which has 2,200 dues-paying members in this county, I was told at their last meeting. That's a lot of members, apparently none of whom think enough of homeless people to bring this issue to their board, and their board thinks the issue is so irrelevant that it won't even consider a resolution on it, even though the ACLU of Southern California is supporting a lawsuit that says exactly that. You can't arrest people in Skid Row. This is the Jones case. The police are not supposed to arrest people in Skid Row unless they have a place to take them where they can go to sleep. Just can't do it. It's not human. It's not humane. It's not appropriate. It's not constitutional. It sucks. And our ACLU sucks on this whole position.
Where did that come from? Somebody fined me before I had a chance to do something else. So I just think that's a bogus argument in terms of like how this is targeting people in some negative way.
Okay, we have Ryan, then Tony.
So, John, I just wanted to check, because my reading of the ordinance clearly contemplates pedestrian uses, people passing through the under the 964.030.
Where does it say?
And Coonerty is being disingenuous here, because the point raised by Don Zimmerman of the ACLU was that not that you can't walk through a parking garage, but rather that if you have a differential standard where some people get 15 minutes and some people get zero amount of time before being warned because they're not allowed there at all, it's a constitutional problem. Instead, Coonerty is ignoring this issue. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, I was actually going to try to talk to you off the air, but that's all right.
Go ahead, George. I'm having some problem with the board here. Hang on a second. Say again.
I was gonna try to talk to you off the air, but I guess I could be on the air.
Okay, we can do it either way, but I'd love to hear you.
I just was going to say that you're doing a good show and that I'm enjoying listening to it, basically.
Cool.
And I think this whole thing is absurd.
Yeah, it is, and it's unfortunate we're going to be facing it, you know, in its naked nastiness in about 3 weeks.
And I'm curious where Mike Rotkin is hearing these complaints. Is this people run into him on the street and they're saying it, or they're calling him personally, or is he claiming these are complaints left on the city council answering machine, like voice message? Where is he getting this?
You know, it's a good question, and actually several Cabrillo students put the question to him in various phone calls. He declined to respond to them. You might, you know, call him yourself, leave a message on his voicemail and say, Mike, I know this issue may be a dead one to some extent, but, you know, can you give me some idea of where you're getting the complaints from and how many you got in the last year and what they involve? Because, you know, that's the basis, apparently, on which you're making this decision.
I mean, it almost sounds like he's pulling it out of his ass to me.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say, you know, I've had people complain to me about, you know, people menacing them in the parking garages. I personally have never once been menaced in a parking garage.
How frequently?
In Santa Cruz or in any parking lot. I have occasionally been menaced on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we going to make some kind of rule about, you know, you can't...
Curfew. Curfew.
Unbelievable.
A downtown curfew. How frequently do you use parking garages?
Sometimes I park in the parking, not very often. I don't park in parking garages very often, but I do walk through them frequently, especially the one that's behind where Trader Joe's is now.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's just adjacent to that. I mean, it's really pretty... you know, easier to walk through there than it is to walk all the way around it and then things like that. And there's a parking lot involved in this, right? There's a parking lot on Elm Street.
Right, that's the only parking lot that actually would be limited at the moment, though they may add others, but right now that's the only one.
Well, you know, if they ended up adding the one that the farmers market's held in, I would have concerns because the farmers market wouldn't really be affected on Wednesdays because they're paying for that spot, right? That's no longer really, supposedly, it's no longer really a public, it's not a public parking lot anymore.
It's privately leased, yeah.
Yeah, privately leased or whatever, but the area that people gather and drum and hang out and stuff right next to it would be, you know, considered part of the public parking lot, and if that lot was to fall under this law or whatever, this ordinance they're trying to put through, then that could affect those people. They could be told to leave after 15 minutes.
Oh, before 15 minutes. You can't even enter an area if you haven't got a vehicle, unless you're going directly through. That's the current law now.
Right, and it's going to affect Elms. So this has already been passed. Is that what you're saying?
It was passed, and it goes into effect about June 22nd.
And then it affects the Elm Street parking lot.
And the four parking garages. Not any other lots.
And it's an $124 fine.
Correct. That's what the testimony of Matt Farrell was at this particular city council meeting.
And what do they say to the suggestion, which I think it's pretty obvious that this is going to be selectively enforced. It's being created to target a certain segment of the population that's completely obvious, and it's obvious that it's people that are homeless or that are you know, wanting to just hang out. It's not about targeting actual crime. I think that's pretty clear. But what do they say when people bring up to them that this will be selectively enforced? Do they simply insist it won't be, that the police will, with all integrity and
such? Our police will act with discretion. Our police, as we can see, for example, in the case of the Party at Your Peril law passed last summer, there have been more than 100 calls for service, and I think no citations or one citation issued. Therefore, the police are being very moderate in what they do. But see, the issue is not who gets cited. The issue is whose liberties are restricted. I mean, the issue is also, of course, who gets cited. But, you know, they're in essence establishing a new standard of behavior for Santa Cruz. They're saying you can't sit in the car and write in your journal.
Another thing is they might not be citing people, but they might come to a gathering and arrest somebody. That wouldn't be part of the statistics. Right.
Well,
I mean, they could start out harassing you for being in the parking garage for more than 15 minutes or whatever, and then they could wind up taking you in for something else, like
being
unruly or something.
The minute that you are under suspicion of a crime, the police suddenly have the right to detain you. If you've actually committed a crime, they can search you. They can custodially arrest you now for infractions in California. It's a strange and vicious ruling. That hasn't passed legislature, but it went through the courts.
The point is, whether they cite you or not, ultimately it expands their power over people. And if the law is being created the whole point of it is for it to be selectively enforced, of course that's how it's going to be enforced. And to say that it won't be is absurd. But anyway, thanks. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
It's an important issue.
Yeah, thank you, George.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's really part of the mentality that gave us the downtown ordinances that give the police sweeping powers on the streets and the sidewalks to can't sit here, you can't sit there, you can't leave your property unattended. And with all these restrictions, sometimes you have to be warned, sometimes you don't. They can claim, I warned you 3 years ago, that's good enough, or you look like somebody I warned, I just remember that I warned you, that's sufficient. It's a way of giving the police massive powers. And again, it's a way of catering to public opinion coming in from a very conservative segment of the community. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, is this the show that's playing right now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I just wanted to say one thing.
Uh-huh. What's your name, caller?
Nadine.
Go ahead.
I don't want my name on the air.
Okay, well, we'll call you N for short. I'm sorry, you're already on the air, but we won't go any further with it. But what would you like to say?
All right. I just want to say that I had to nurse my baby in the parking lot for up to like half hour sometimes.
No more, Nadine. Sorry.
Right.
Give that baby a bottle and get it out of the parking lot.
Right. I just wanted to put that out there because nursing mothers, a lot of times, you'll go to the changing room in a store or something like that, or a parking lot because it can be private if you're, you know, in your car, but it won't be if some police is knocking on the window telling you to.
And of course, it's really, I mean, you know, the thing is, the police will probably not knock on your window. It will be selectively enforced, but maybe it won't, depending on how, are you in an old...
Well, depending on what kind of car I drive.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Is it an old Volkswagen van? Well, good luck, you know. Is it, you know, it depends on that kind of thing. So it's nasty stuff. It gives the police greater power.
It depends. Like, what if the cop is in a bad mood, you know? Who knows?
Right.
So,
you know, it isn't even the cops. If a merchant looks askance at you, they can call.
And doesn't approve of
right. They can make
no,
a citizen's arrest of
too.
You if they want. You know, it doesn't have to be a police officer.
It could be anybody.
It can be anybody. It can be anybody of the most bigoted mentality now.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It makes perfect sense if you want things a certain way downtown.
Well, it makes perfect sense if it goes along with the whole fascist state.
Exactly.
So.
Thanks for calling, Nadine.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. We're reviewing the City Council's final vote on the parking garage paranoia law, as I call it, the 15-minute trespass law that if you have a vehicle or a bicycle, you can be in the parking garage for 15 minutes. But if you don't, you can only walk straight through and no loitering allowed. Don't duck in out of the rain and hang out, or you're subject to a $124 ticket. Hi, you're on the air with Robert.
Yeah, I will be there to arrest her. I will be the town crier. I will arrest her for breastfeeding her child.
Well, I'm glad that we have some people who respect the law, Crow. Thank you.
I want this law fully done. If they make the law, I want to make sure that they are responsible for this law.
You better call Fitzmaurice and have him come along, because he was promising that he kept insisting the law cannot be selectively enforced. Of course,
and not only that, check this out, Robert. If I see a baby sleeping in the car, I'm going to call the cops and say that somebody's sleeping with a blanket. Okay.
Right,
and for
more than 15 minutes, because if they're in a car...
Oh, they're not even in a car. It could be anywhere.
Right.
Anybody who has a blanket and they're sleeping...
That's after 11 p.m. You're allowed to do it before 11
p.m. Children have to sleep, you know. I'm going to call the cops on them.
Well, I think you're a man who wants to see a new Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
New Santa Cruz. Fuck Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Crow. Bye-bye. Back to the City Council. And please call in if you'd like. I'll put your call on the air. This is Neil Coonerty.
Page 2, top paragraph. For purposes other than
he's asking
motor
a question
vehicle
of John
or bicycle
Barcelona,
parking
City
or retrieval
attorney.
Or pedestrian purposes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I just want to make sure that
The first section says that parking lot 9 may also be used by pedestrians to walk from one sidewalk to another or to walk to buildings that border the parking lot, so that it doesn't expressly say that, you know, parking garages can be used as alleys to transfer from one street to another.
And then just for the ACLU's concerns about labor activities, there's
before we get on to that, again, I want to point out that Coonerty is being deceptive here. The issue is if someone is hanging around, stops in a parking garage for some reason, maybe he wants to help someone carry groceries, who knows what he wants to do. If he's immediately illegal, then he's subject to a citation. I suppose you might say the warning provision might have some impact on that. I actually pulled up the actual law. No person shall be cited for violating the provisions of the chapter unless the person has at least one time at any prior period in time received a written or verbal warning from a police officer, community services officer, or other city employee. You don't even have to be warned by a police officer. You can be warned by a host. You know, you can be warned by a parking worker. You can be warned by, who knows, any city employee responsible for the operation or maintenance of the city garage or parking lots relative to which the conduct which is prohibited under the chapter. So, it's not an even standard. You don't have 15 minutes if you don't have a car. You have 0 minutes if you don't have a car. And the ACLU said just make it 15 minutes for everybody. And instead of responding to why you shouldn't do that, Coonerty just ignored the issue and said, well, you have the right to walk through, right? And the city attorney said, yep. And then he talked about labor activities. He's going to now claim that labor activities are okay. It's not. It doesn't limit labor activities.
Activities in both the California and federal law, which I assume would protect people's right to protest or picket.
Somebody's suggesting that the labor unions of the city are going to have a protest in one of the garages where nobody sees them?
Yeah.
Or what's the argument here? I'm missing something.
They're asking us for this.
I don't know. There's federal and state law that deals with this issue, right? I mean, in addition to constitutional law.
That's correct.
Okay.
Saying it's no problem if we remove constitutional rights for our city citizens because state and federal law will protect them. A strange argument.
Be very brief. I just want people to remember that how this ordinance came about was the fact that we had parking garage workers who show up to work at 5 o'clock and who are not...
A.M.
5 a.m., and who are not part of the moneyed class and not part of the privileged class, not part of the business community. They showed up and they came and they went to their employer, which is the city of Santa Cruz, and asked for us to do something because their jobs become unbearable. Because they faced intimidation, they had to clean up refuse, they had to clean up bodily fluids, they had a variety of problems.
And yet, in all four parking garages between January and June of 2005, according to their own statistics, they only called for police assistance on 5 or 6 occasions. Isn't that strange?
Asked their employer, and their union came and asked their employer, which is the city, to step up and do something. And so there is a long list of things that you can't do now in garages, but every one of those things you can do on a sidewalk, every one of those things you can do in a park, but you can't do it in a parking garage, which is not a public forum. It is.
So again, New Coonerty likes to use the word public forum a lot, as though it's sort of you should go to a park if you want to make a speech. Yeah, but what if you want to breastfeed your baby? Or what if you want to read a book? You don't go there because you want a public forum. You go there because you expect a natural expectation of privacy. You expect to be treated like a normal human being in those spaces, not like someone who is to be run about like an automaton under threat of being tasered or beaten or cited. And you know, I would have called that kind of an extreme statement, but as I may have mentioned on the air, that's what happened to me about 5 nights ago in Felton as I was driving through about 11:30 at night. I was pulled over by a police officer, a Deputy Smith, who, when I got out of the car to ask him what was going on and to take a newspaper out of the back to read while I was waiting for him to check my rear taillight, which is why he stopped me, he approached me at a trot with his truncheon out, shouting, "Get back in the car." Then when I got back in the car, because I wasn't getting my driver's license out sufficiently quickly, he pulled out what appeared to be pepper spray, although it might have been a taser, I'm not sure. And I said, hey, I'm just getting my license, relax. He declined to give me the name of his sergeant or to call him. And after the whole ticket had finished, he'd called for backup. This is for an infraction violation by a county sheriff. So I'm just trying to show how things can escalate very, very quickly. From, you know, and I, even though I'm outspoken with respect to the police, I also feel I'm pretty straightforward in dealing with them. And I'm not a threat to them in terms of any physical threat. And even though we may disagree with each other on a number of issues, there is a certain level of, dare I say it, mutual respect. They understand what I'm doing when I say, come over and take a look, Pam Bechtel giving a ticket to a poor person. That means something because I'm informing the community about something that's happening. They understand it's not that I don't like a particular police officer and I'm trying to bring her down. It's because I'm trying to educate the community. And they may not like it, but they understand it. This police officer didn't. And when I approached him as he was leaving to say, I want to get your sergeant to give me a call, he stopped the car and demanded I get back in my car, raced over, slammed the car door on me, because my car door was slightly open, and continued what it might have been for somebody else sufficient provocation. Well, certainly it was quite traumatic when it happened to me, and unexpected. I'm not usually treated that way by police, but when you have police get involved in these situations, and it's going to be with poor people that this is going to happen, because it's going to be the poor people that will be maybe going through the parking lot not sufficiently quickly to satisfy somebody else, or maybe lingering to talk, or who knows, maybe coming out of the rain and staying out of the rain. You know, then when the police officer comes over and wants to write a ticket, I foresee difficult situations ahead. Or, and perhaps even worse, I foresee people quietly and in fear surrendering their rights, which is really what's been happening in this town for the last decade and a half, and what's been happening in this country, certainly for the last 5 years and before that as well. That's the real danger that we face here.
It serves a specific purpose, and I don't think we should forget about why and how this ordinance came forward.
Tony, you're next.
I do see this as a worker safety issue, and Ryan, you took the questions I was going to ask, so thank you.
This is Tony Madrigal, the man who poses as the friend of labor. And, you know, it would be nice if we really talked about it as a worker safety issue, if we really addressed it in terms of real solutions like cell phones for the workers and citizen patrols, perhaps, or better lighting or all kinds of different possibilities. But instead, you have a special interest law that's being dressed up in, presented by the, essentially cooked up by the police department with parking workers and the city attorney that criminalizes the entire community. It says you're all criminals if you do what you normally do in a parking lot. So change your behavior. That's our solution. We're not going to give our parking workers any more protection. We're just going to create this new law. This is the brilliant Tony Madrigal, the great union supporter, backing this law.
But I do see this as a worker safety issue. To the young people that talk about what would you do if this was your children, I'm also thinking, what would I do if these workers were my children, or these workers were my brothers and sisters, who would, you know, come to work every day, dedicate their lives to cleaning up the city and
These are workers who presented zero instances of any time when they called the police and filed complaints that resulted in any kind of arrest or conviction. You might say, well, this means that the police can't arrest them, can't convict them, because our court system is so friendly to the offender. I don't think that's true. I think we're dealing with a situation that has not been adequately explored. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
So a quick question about this story that this originated from city workers complaining.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is supposedly where it originated.
Correct.
According to Neil Coonerty.
Yeah, according to Ryan Coonerty.
Oh, Ryan Coonerty.
And according to Tony Madrigal, yeah.
Right. So, what I'm thinking here is that there's already laws, right? Not that I'm in favor of them, but against sleeping.
Yes.
Outside without a blanket a certain hour and such.
On any public property that isn't a residence.
Right. So, I mean, there's already a law in place prohibiting what these people say happened, which is they came and there was people sleeping there or were in the parking garage when they came to work early in the morning, right?
Right. Well, they're claiming there was piles of shit around. There were needles. They were abused. People threw things at them. Some guy was masturbating on all fours. That's what Leslie Scanagato, the SEIU, was saying several times. There's vandalism. There's burglary. There's all-night parties. People leave bottles.
Well, if the sleeping ban hasn't prevented, you know, this type of thing from happening, how is another law going to change it?
Well, the idea is, here's their theory. They're going to frighten people away from any use of the parking lot other than parking a vehicle. That's their plan. You know, you won't be able to sit there and watch the sunset with your lover. You won't be able to hang out up there and, you know, do an event like the Guerrilla Theater event without a special permit, like we did when we showed the movie on the Cinema 9 wall from the parking garage. It's going to remove all people, and therefore, in the theory, because it'll remove everybody, it'll remove all crime. That's their theory.
But in reality, reality, these types of things will probably happen anyway. I mean, is it, if somebody's masturbating on all fours, if that really happened, are they going to be, is somebody in a mental state like that going to be deterred by this? I mean, no. I mean, that kind of thing's going to happen regardless of some law.
Well, it's true that, for example, if people hang out, like people like to hang out in different places, I mean, it'll stop people from hanging out to a certain extent unless they're parking a vehicle and hanging out around their vehicle, because they're going to probably feel worried that, you know, they don't necessarily want to be get a citation for it. So they may not even start to hang out. And that's what Rotkin would say. Well, see, there won't be these menacing people there. When people drive through, they'll feel more comfortable stopping because these group of, you know, people who aren't even homeless people, Rotkin would say, it's not a homeless issue.
Okay, but supposedly this originated from people coming in really early in the morning that work for the city and being exposed to feces and trash and the occasional, you know, wing nut. Now, if that's the case, then it's, I just don't see how that this law is going to change any of that.
You and me both.
If that kind of thing's happening in the middle of the night and they're coming in early in the morning and encountering that, I mean, you've made this point a million times. There's already all kinds of rules against shitting in public and all that kind of thing. So this, if, as they say, the reason for this is this city worker complaints about some coming in early in the morning, it's not going to, it's not even going to address that.
Well, that city worker might tell you, you know, they can come in and hang out but not sleep, and it's legal for them. So all they have to do when the police officer comes is just look like they're not sleeping, and they won't get sleeping tickets, and they can go, nee, nee, nee. Whereas now, if they're even there at all, unless they can show proof of ownership of a vehicle or that they're with a vehicle, then they can be given a ticket. Therefore, they won't even hang out there at all. Therefore, we'll cut down on the number of people there. That's the motivation.
So what's your response to that argument?
Well, my response is that if you're in a situation where people actually are doing that because they have inadequate shelter, you should address the issue of shelter. You shouldn't run around trying to, you know, put a burden on the entire community and make everybody be their own little police officer to themselves and their family because you want to eliminate people who are sleeping in emergency circumstances, fundamentally.
Okay, so basically the city council passed this.
Yep. Fitzmaurice and Porter opposed it, but I think they would have favored a nighttime ban.
And then the next step is that it becomes law on the 25th of June?
22nd or so. It becomes law a month after its passage. It was passed on May 23rd, so I'm assuming since May has 31 days, it's like June 22nd or June 21st.
So the situation is now that people would have to protest it by direct action or like...
Right, or by a court challenge, you know, by doing things like Crow suggests, you know, ticketing everybody they can find and tourists and essentially letting tourists know what they're in for with this, saying, we're going to be here watching you. You will damn well get out of this parking garage in 15 minutes, making it a higher price to pay. I mean, it would require some commitment from people to protest. And also, people could do a sit-in there. We could have a scavenger hunt in the parking. I mean, there are all kinds of things people could do. We could go in and just have a read-in. We could all go read in our cars. You know, I mean, the police might ignore us, though, too. You know, I mean, that's always possible. That's one of the tactics they have for dealing with protests is they ignore the protests until people get tired of it, and then they go pick off the people who are really, you know, the people who need to sleep at night, and they just got no place to go.
Well, you know, I used to work for the city, and I occasionally had to clean up areas that were really disgusting, where people had left needles, where they had, you know, shit and, you know, made huge messes in areas that were pretty nice, like down by the river and this kind of thing. And so I understand the frustrations of city workers that deal with that.
Right.
But, you know, if, as they're arguing, that is the basis for this sweeping, you know, really repressive ordinance or law or whatever, you know, I agree that it's not the solution. Anyway, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. You're tuned to Free Radio. I'm Robert Norris. We're reaching the last 5 minutes of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, talking about the parking garage paranoia law passed by City Council. They would call it the trespassing law, use of and trespassing upon downtown city parking lots and garages, 9.64, now a new section of the city code which goes into force in about 25 days. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, this is Crow again.
Hey, Crow, welcome back. Mr. Five-time caller.
Yeah, I know. I love your show. I just can't get away from it. But I want to be really short. You know, if you guys want to do a little read-in, I'm going to be there and make sure that I call the cops on you, okay?
All right. Well, that's what I call a man who's a law-abiding citizen.
Bye.
Thank you. And what I'm going to do now, since I'm really reaching the end of this, I haven't been able to play this whole charade at City Council, which was a charade because, of course, they didn't present real figures that we could actually come to some conclusions on. I mean, you know, if we're talking about rapes in the parking garages, that's something different than camping in the parking garages. So we need to know what we're dealing with. I know that another broadcaster, Ann Simonton, came down on me very hard for supporting this law. And my response to that was, well, come on this in the air and let's discuss it. Let's debate it. You know, I mean, I've got no problem with that. But she never did, unfortunately. Anyway, we're going to talk about this more. I'm going to play a few street interviews as I kind of wrap up the show in the last 3 minutes. And I want to encourage you to stay tuned for Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs. That's going to be happening in about 3 minutes. A man who plays music she may not have heard for a while. Or maybe you heard it last week. I don't know. We'll see about that. Stay tuned. Talk to you later, Crow. Actually, I think we lost him. Okay, so, and again, you can come back again and hear more of the same in about 3 or 4 days on Sunday on 9:30 in the morning when I'll be back with the rest of the City Council meeting as well as their discussion of the panhandling law, which is coming back for a second reading and is some interesting aspects to it. So stay with me and come back again. And stay with Uncle Dennis, and you can see what's cooking on the musical front.
And it's about 15 to 7. Here's a person playing an unusual instrument. What is this instrument?
It's called a hong drum.
What exactly is it?
What is it? Well, it's a hollow, looks like a little flying saucer with small indents. So each indent has a different note. The
and what are you playing today? Is this your own composition? Or?
No, I'm just making things up in the moment. I'm just improvising.
In fact, you have some of your own improvisations here that you're passing on for a donation?
Yeah. Yep.
This is at the celebration of Führer Bush as the international terrorist.
Terrorist?
Yes.
He's a bad.
My name is Francis. What's your name?
I'm Robert Francis. How long have you been doing this kind of, again, the instrument is called a...
Hong drum.
Hondra?
Hong drum.
Hong drum.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not hum drum, but it's hong drum.
Hong drum, yes.
How long have you been hong drumming it up?
Well, just about 4 months.
And did you take long to learn?
No, it was a natural thing for me.
Do you have it looks like a second instrument behind you, or is that simply a case?
Yeah, that's a fiddle, violin.
So things get boring with the hong drum, you whip out the violin.
Yeah, I've been doing that a lot longer, yeah.
Now, these are River of Tears. This is one of your CDs?
Yeah, that's a violin CD.
These are all sheer violin, there's no words involved?
No, I have a CD that's coming out in a few weeks that has singing. But this is just instrumental, and this is just instrumental hong drum.
And how much do you seek for donation for these?
Sliding scale, but maybe, you know, $7 or $8. Yeah. And these are usually 10, but I let people buy them for whatever they have.
No hassles from police?
Well, I just started 5 minutes ago. Is it an issue here?
If you have your own work, it's all right. If you do it for... Even if you sell it for donation, I think you can even put a price on your own work, although it depends on the police officer. It is illegal, however, to have a display device, which is a cap, within 10 feet of a building. And they'll tell you that. I mean, that'll be the first thing they'll probably tell you.
Okay.
I mean, it's unreasonable, ridiculous, and abusive, but that's one of their laws.
Okay.
I may perhaps play some of this on free radio. Who knows?
Oh, cool. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. she gets tired, she just moves on over the way. Rising in the east, she lights up the day.
And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your Uncle Dennis here on a Thursday night. Hope you're ready for some music from the 60s and 70s, because that's what we got going here on a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. You are, of course, tuned to 101.1 FM in the greater Santa Cruz area, and out there in the rest of the known universe at www.freakradio.org. We'll, of course, be trying to bring you music from the 60s and 70s just to make a life a little bit more pleasant for you tonight. We will have, of course, the Brew of the Week coming up at 8:30. At 9 o'clock, we will have an abbreviated version of the Earth First Update. At 10 o'clock, of course, the Mystery Group Listener Call-In Contest. And at 11 o'clock, a different show called In the Mix with DJ Soup. So stay tuned for all of that. Of course, in addition to H.P. Lovecraft, how about It's a Beautiful Day?